As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and this week on the panel, I'm joined by Patty Barkley, Tony Cascarino, and from lovely downtown Ripon, Ollie Kay. This week, we're going to be looking at Everton, who knocked out Chelsea, holders of the FA Cup 2 years running at Stamford Bridge. It was a penalty shootout, and it was a special goal from Leighton Baines. On the subject of Leighton, Leighton Orient hold Arsenal to a 1-1 draw and win themselves a replay. We'll also have our usual quick hits feature, and in our debate, we'll be taking a look at Barcelona. Do they belong among the greatest sides ever? So please stick with us for the next 35 minutes or so. I know for some people, the Premier League review is the their favorite part of the program. We don't have a Premier League review this week because it's FA Cup, but we still have two Premier League sides, Chelsea and Everton. Chelsea, out of the cup, we won't have three in a row. I thought Everton came out of the gate very, very well, but Chelsea hung in there, and I thought, and certainly the second half and in extra time, despite some of the commentary on my TV, I thought that they had the better of the game. Am I wrong, Cass?
Chelsea are dominating in possession, and they missed a few opportunities. The problem I have watching Chelsea is that they used to make the most out of these type of games. Games that were hanging in the balance, they seem to grind the team down and win, and they're not doing that now. They seem to be the opposition that is hanging on and then getting something from the game. And I've got to be honest, I was surprised by Ancelotti's lineup for Champions League in midweek. He had a golden opportunity to change things around, desperate to try and win a game. That's the obvious reason I can think. But there are problems at Chelsea. If anyone ignores what's been happening over the last couple of months, it's mad, because they've had so many indifferent results and personnel has changed. And it's going to be another telling time for me, and I think coming into the Copenhagen game this week, it's a tough time to be a player at that football club and a manager.
Cass, you say you were surprised by the lineup, but I'm just looking at who he had on his bench. Of course, David Luiz and Fernando Torres, he couldn't use them, and you know, he started with Michael Essien on the bench. Obviously, that's one change, Mikel for Essien. I suppose he could have played Djurkov, who came on at some point, and Anelka started on the bench, and then beyond that, he had Jakob Posala and Ryan Bertrand, who I believe haven't made their debuts yet, and Josh McEachran. So, I mean, judging from the personnel there, there's only so much he could have done in terms of playing an alternative lineup, right?
Yeah, he could have done, but the Champions League game for me has become such a great importance now for Chelsea Football Club. It's not inconceivable that Copenhagen knocked them out. Probably unlikely, but it's still a possibility. And I would want every player that would have played in this cup tie that I thought could be available for Copenhagen. They wouldn't have got a chance. They wouldn't have played. And I think you had to somehow give an opportunity to, you know, like the Arsenals do, let younger players play who might not even have an opportunity. I just thought this Copenhagen game has become too big of a match for them.
Ollie, would that have been a wise choice for Ancelotti, or would he just been crucified, lose again, and then also on top of that say you're insulting the glory and sanctity of the FA Cup by playing a bunch of people who haven't kicked the ball for the first team yet?
I don't agree with Cass, sorry. But I think you picked the right lineup, or something like the right lineup, in order to try and win the game. I mean, you're basically looking at a sort of a pool of about 14 players that he's got at the moment. Plus, perhaps Josh McEachran could have started the game, I suppose. But you cannot blame Ancelotti, in my view, for looking at that and thinking, "We have to go through. We have to win this game." And you know, they came within a minute a minute of going through in extra time until the superb free kick from late Baines, and even then it's down to a 50-50 in penalties. And I thought he picked the right team. Well, something like the right team. Maybe there would be a case for resting one or two of them, but I think resting Essien was a good idea because he's been out of form and seemingly needing a rest. But I don't have a problem with the team he picked at all. It's I think he would have got more criticism for picking a weak team and losing.
Paddy, you were there. What did Everton do right, especially in the first half?
They worked hard. Worked hard all through the game, and they needed to do that after being criticised for lack of commitment almost in the previous game against Bolton. So they worked very hard. They counter-attacked when they could. I thought Chelsea were much the better side in what was a very, very good game. But the problem with Everton is creativity. You know, they apart from Arteta and Leighton Baines with his crossing. Mm. That's it.
Coleman?
Coleman. Don't talk to me about Coleman. He's a marvellous athlete and he's going to be a very good player. But on Saturday, he played like he'd never played football before. He looked worth every penny of 60 grand. I'm telling you, his use of the ball was abysmal. Mm. And I think it was just one of those days, because I've seen him a lot of times before, been very, very impressed.
See, that's the whole... Patrick, that's the point about Everton. When you play Everton, you know exactly what you're coming up against.
Yes.
They are going to work you harder than any other team. Or if not, obviously the top four teams always work harder than most sides, but Everton, outside that bracket, I think they'll match you all over the park. And if they fall short of that, like they did against Bolton the week before, Chelsea knew what this game was going to be like. And it's no coincidence they've been, three or four draws, Paddy?
That's right. They really need somebody. I mean, it was really sad. I mean, Moyes tried to get something going up front by playing two strikers. I mean, Cahill, as you'd imagine, just off the front. But Cahill was playing balls and Beckford was 20 yards. He couldn't see them. Mm. He couldn't see. And
it's also maybe a function of Beckford's not Zaha.
Oh, that's exactly it. I mean, if Zaha, all through the game, I was saying if Zaha was here, it'd be a different game. But, that's it. Every team has got to be able to take one player out and still be able to play.
Final word to just wrap up Chelsea and Everton. A tremendous free kick from Leighton Baines. This is a guy who, he starts at Wigan.
Yeah.
They get promoted. Nobody really notices. Oh,
promoted
just
twice.
Just another sort of obscure in Scouser. Presume overlooked by the teams on Merseyside.
He reminds me of Dennis Irwin of Manchester United.
Yeah.
That player with the ability to do things like he did and goes under the radar.
Yeah.
7 out of 10 every week.
The left back position for England has suddenly become a tremendous strength. We've got arguably one of the best in the world in Ashley Cole, so that's fine. The number one on the is great. We now have this guy Baines, who has undoubtedly come back and has to be an absolute cert for if not the match in Wales, definitely the match against Ghana.
Who's number three
that follows? And coming along is Kieran Gibbs.
Moving on to the mighty O's taking on Arsenal. One thing that struck me, we touched upon this before, Arsene Wenger, of course, had his Champions League game already, but he decided to make a bunch of changes. And, I think we saw the debut as a regular, certainly one of his very first games, of Nacho Miguel at the back for Arsenal, alongside Sebastian Skilashi, another guy who doesn't get too much playing time. And you have your Rosicki, you've got your Bettner starting. Ollie, you were there. Was this the kind of thing where Arsenal take the lead, one-way traffic, and then boom, a wonder strike, and Wenger's groaning that he's got a replay to deal with?
Yeah, well, that's pretty much how Wenger saw it. But I would say that after Arsenal scored that goal, I think 8 minutes into the second half, they had a period where they looked like they were going to add a second and maybe a third, but then suddenly Orient just came into it again. I don't know to what extent it was the very lively substitute Tehue, but it was he certainly made a big impact. And you looked at the last 20 minutes, Orient were really threatening. They had sort of two near misses before the goal finally came, and I thought certainly not in terms of possession or anything like that, but you could certainly make an argument for saying that Orient deserved a replay, which is probably much the same as saying that Arsenal deserved to beat Barcelona a few nights earlier.
Paddy, is there Orient get a replay, which you know, back it means that they'll get some money from, or quite a bit of money, I would presume, from the gate and the Emirates, and they'll probably go and spend that money on player wages. But I can't help but think, if you were at Orient, what I want to throw out here in this situation is, for Leighton Orient, might it not have been slightly better to go and settle it on the night? So now Arsenal get a game they really don't want to play, a game that they'll almost definitely win. All Leighton Orient effectively get out of it is a big payday and money that they'll presumably spend on player wages. Am I wrong here, Cass?
I would say, and is it Gillingham and played against the likes of Everton, and we had Tottenham's in the cups. Absolutely dream for players to go and play at the Emirates. You know, these Orient players, probably none of them will get the opportunity ever again. And for them...
Yeah, but when you played for Gillingham, you knew that... I mean, you knew you were going to play in those places later, right?
Well, if you got a great cup draw, yeah. But also, what you mean as in a player?
You personally.
Well, at the time, no. I was a young kid and broke into... I didn't know whether I'd make the level I did. But a lot of them, Leighton Orient players, won't achieve... You know, to play at the very top end of football. See, it's fun for them. They will absolutely love it to go.
But
to,
is
to
it
the
top end of football if you're going to play at the Emirates against the Arsenal C team, where or even the better Arsenal players who don't want to be there and nobody cares? And I mean, does that rob some of the drama compared to what it might have been like a few years ago?
It's undermined slightly. Yeah, I agree with that. But going to the Emirates and playing there, and there will be a huge Leighton Orient contingent that will follow them, and they'll just say, well, we hope Arsenal play the weakest team we can, because we might even get the opportunity of going to Old Trafford, which is their draw. Exactly. So there'll be absolutely no problem at all. So the club will love it. The only people who don't like it are the big clubs, because they've got extra games.
Hey, Paddy, leave the Orient. It's just a word on them. I mean, I would venture to guess, out of all the league clubs in London, this is probably... You know, we use the word fashionable and so on. This is the one that, I mean, even Brentford tends to make the headlines slightly more than Leighton Orient do.
And
the only reason we even mentioned them recently is because, of course, the Olympic Stadium is on their patch, and they're the ones who get screwed no matter who gets it. And the fact that they built flats and in the ground. Is this just one of the wonderful quirks? Is this like sort of the archetypal community
club?
Yeah,
well, it's nice to be reminded every now and again that Leighton Orient isn't just a nice name for a football club, and that one actually does still exist there. I mean, Brentford, yes, Brentford, you associate the former chairman of the BBC ran it, and Greg Dyke, whereas Orient are run by Barry Hearn, a sort of more of a more EastEnders than Panorama. As far as replays are concerned, yes, the players will love it. The fans will love the day out, going to a magnificent stadium like the Emirates Stadium. And it gives Arsenal a chance to use, you know, the almost plethora of backup maybe players, one of whom may get a chance to shine.
We should name check Jonathan Tehue, because it's the second time that he's come up with heroics in the FA Cup. And Ollie Kay has a nice piece about it on page 3 of the game insert today. So Ollie, can you tell us why we should care about Jonathan Tehue and what makes his story so wonderful?
Well, he's a guy of 26 who's basically, I mean, it was quite funny that we sort of asked Arsene Wenger whether, with his encyclopedic knowledge, he had heard of Tehue, because obviously he's a French striker, and I think I speak for most of the national journalists there if I say that I hadn't heard of him. And I don't think there's too much shame in admitting that, considering that Arsene Wenger said the same. And it was just a great story, because you look at him, and he looked brilliant for those 20 minutes. It wasn't just the goal. There were a couple of speedy, incisive runs down the right, and he's done it before as well. He did it against Droylsden in the second round. I think they were on their way out of the cup, I think 1-0 down or 2-1 up, and then he scored an equaliser in the last minute, forced the extra time, and then got the second and third goal extra time. So he's been a real good luck charm for them in the cup.
Jonathan Tuhui, that was the first installment of your 15 minutes of fame, but may you get many more, perhaps by scoring the winner at the Emirates.
It was actually most of the 15 minutes, wasn't it, my ramble?
Yes, it was extremely long, and I'm sure that Pat, our producer, will cut you down to size. Okay, so we all got to see Barcelona very, very up close last week against Arsenal. And what I'd like to talk about in our debate is what we think about where it ranks, because we all know the statistics that, you know, they're on pace to break the record in La Liga for points. They're on pace to break the record in La Liga for goals. This is for a 38-game season. You know, they won the Champions League with much the same team 2 years ago. Probably, in my opinion anyway, were the best team in the Champions League last year. Probably still are the best team in the Champions League this year. And what's really striking about them is at a time that football is moving, or has been moving for some time, towards, you know, a more physical style of play, or more athletic style of play. I don't want to say that these guys are unathletic, but, you know, you have a situation where, except for Sergi Busquets, if you look at the midfielders and the strikers, the tallest off the top of my head is 5'7", which seems like an absurdity, and I mean, they're really the only team in the world yes. like this.
Yes.
But of course, they go and they lose to Arsenal at the Emirates. And I just want to know, has our opinion of them changed? What do we make of them? And since you're laughing, Cass, I'll let you go first. All right, you laughing at all the little Barcelona Smurfs?
Well, I'm just thinking, apart from not being good enough, I probably wouldn't have got into their team, being 6'3". But and incidentally, letting Ibrahimovic go as well, who was their only big player last year. I think they're amazing to watch. I've watched a lot of them this year. Their movement and their ability to close down, their work rate, technical. You know, they've got it all. I mean, it's quite funny, because before the game at the Emirates, someone was saying to me, find weaknesses, and I said, well, I've never really known how good the goalkeeper is, because not many teams seem to get to him very often. And I think it is a weakness in their side.
Well, but, you know, that they don't concede enough shots.
Well, they tend to get the ball very high up the park, and obviously possession is very dominant in their style. They are certainly, and you touched on it, Gab, because when you're talking about a team that's breaking records or equaling records that have been set, you have to be one of the all-time greats, because all the barriers, they were that close of breaking the all-time away victories, wasn't they, in La Liga as well. It was very close to that. So they are, for me, they have to be an all-time great team, and I look at them and think the pace of their performances, it'll be so interesting, the replay in the Camp Nou. That's going to be a real tester, because Arsenal did do fantastically well in the way they turned the tie around. But I do think there's some major obstacles in the new Camp that's going to be confronted for Arsenal to try and deal with, and I think that's going to prove a huge, huge test for them.
Paddy, does it matter that Barcelona aren't just dominating, but that they're doing it in a way unlike any other team that we've seen before?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to be careful of measuring this Barcelona team by its victories or its goals, because by and large, the standard of La Liga has gone down. I say this having watched Barcelona beat Athletic with a great deal of difficulty last night. A very impressive performance by Athletic, I thought. But by and large, La Liga hasn't offered the kind of challenge that you got a few years ago when Valencia had an outstanding side, when Deportivo La Coruña was still up there.
Seville,
you know, were winning trophies in Europe. So the standard generally is not so impressive. It is a bit Rangers Celtic. I'm not dissing Valencia for a second, but the plain fact is that it's a two-horse race in Spain. I would say this Barcelona is not only the best club in the world at the moment, but I would say it's my favourite football team of all time, ahead of Frank Rijkaard's team. Which,
are you saying this because you weren't old enough to remember the great Hungarian side of your forefathers?
I don't remember the Hungarian side of my forefathers, but I do remember the Real Madrid team that won 7-3 against Eintracht Frankfurt at Hampden Park. I saw the Milan team that took over dominance of Europe after the banning of the of Liverpool and other English clubs after Hazel. And I think that the greatest...
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Club performance I've ever seen was Milan in under Capello in the final of 1993 or 1994, in which they beat the so-called dream team of Barcelona, Johan Cruyff's team, 4-0. Now that team, including the searing pace of Ronald Koeman, the endless creativity of Baquero and so on, was not nearly as good as this side. This side, for me, is football at the journey's end. This is the 5-0 victory over Real Madrid earlier this season. If I could have one video of any football match that has ever taken place, that would unquestionably be it. And if you say, well, what would be the second? It would be that same video in black and white. It was so good. It was just football for me defined.
What stands out about the Barcelona team is their incredible work rate, and that you don't normally associate with fantastically flair side, incredible organisation. That is, for me, is one of the standouts. When I watch them play, they actually all complement each other when they haven't got the ball. You don't really see that.
Ollie, what's your take on this? Are they that organized defensively? And I'm thinking about those times that they do press high up the pitch and they lose it. Sometimes to me it does look as if, you know, maybe it's just the way Puyol looks with his hair flapping all over the place, or Piqué's long limbs having come across. I wonder if maybe they could be slightly more organised, but maybe I'm just nitpicking here and being sad.
Well, their main sort of defensive strategy is keeping the ball and keeping it a long way away from their goal and from Victor Valdes. But I mean, they generally have two very attacking fullbacks very far up the field. They you know, Xavi and Iniesta and all these players, they knock it around so well, so effectively. So rarely surrender possession in any kind of dangerous area. I mean, that to me is their main defensive strategy. Although Busquets is a very intelligent guy, especially for such a young player. I wish England could produce that kind of player once in a while. But I mean, I don't think their defensive ability or even their work rate, which is admirable, is what I would necessarily gush about. I just think they are fantastic to watch. Those sort of little 3-4 yard passes in the middle of the pitch, the one touch stuff, it is brilliant. And I would say, combined with the sort of balletic poise and brilliance of Messi, who's perhaps the one player who's slightly different in profile in the forward line. They are just sensational to watch.
The work rate, unfortunately, is a prerequisite for the kind of football they play.
Yeah.
If you played that football in your own half, you'd be relegated. Mm. You have to play it, and that means early repossession, and that's why Xavi, for me, is one of the greatest midfield players who's ever lived.
But about that work rate, do we agree that you can have, because it's incredible. I mean, what they say in Spain is that Barcelona's work rate is actually, well, they basically rest for three quarters of the game when they have the ball.
Yeah.
And that's what allows you to then run around like a maniac to win the ball back in that other 25% of the time when you don't have it.
Is it true, Kaz, that when you have the ball, you don't get tired?
Well, it depends. On the back of that, does it also make a difference if you have the ball and you're playing for Barcelona and you know that your teammates are named Xavi and yes, you're not going to give it away, whereas perhaps if you're playing for Millwall and your teammates are some of the guys you played with, then maybe you're still a little bit nervous to lose the ball.
I think what does make a difference, if you've got the confidence in one of the players playing alongside you, you know he's not going to lose it, you don't make... You know, you don't make runs that are not necessary. You know, you don't waste energy like lots of teams do, give the ball away, making runs. Which is, I can remember playing as a centre forward on numerous occasions with a winger that would do one thing and do another. I'd be coming in, I'd be going out, I wouldn't be wasting my runs. But if you know that the player in midfield is going to do a certain thing, and 99 times out of 100, you know exactly what's going to, it's a big advantage. Mm. And if we were to name a World 11, we wouldn't name Barcelona's back four or their goalkeeper for me in a World 11.
Well, I'd have Piqué in there.
Well, I certainly could think of others, but, you know, Puyol, the way they play, but he, even when he's out of the team, they look weaker, slightly defensively. Their ability is from the midfield to the forward line. It is just stunning to watch. It really is.
Ollie, this is something that, I mean, Cass touched upon it there. My one concern, because for me, I love aesthetics and dominance, but I also want to see trophies at the end of the season. My one concern is that this is not a very big squad, and it's not a big squad by choice, but there's almost a chicken and egg situation. So anybody who saw them at the weekend against Bilbao would have seen that, you know, Mascherano just didn't fit. He was a square peg in a round hole. And it's not because Mascherano is a bad player. It's because he hasn't played with those other guys much, and when he does play with the other guys, he tends to play badly because he doesn't fit. And so as a result, it seems to me that once... This is basically a team of 13 players. So at the weekend, Puyol wasn't there. He tried putting Busquets at the back and Mascherano in midfield. I think because he didn't want to, he wanted to give Maxwell a day off as well. But then at halftime, he's like, oh no, I got to change this. And he went back and put Abidal in the middle, Maxwell at left back, and Busquets back in midfield. There's only so many ways you can shuffle the same 13 players around. Is this something that could damage them in the long term? Should he maybe at the expense of this great sort of team ethic, should he maybe have found ways to integrate his new players earlier in the season?
I think the problem is that they've got a small squad, as you say. I mean,
that's by choice.
But I don't imagine it's Guardiola's choice. I imagine that's a sort of
It kind of is though. I mean, he's got Milito there, for example, who he hardly ever plays because he doesn't seem to trust him. I mean, I'm sure you know, you could get some money for Milito and bring in somebody else, or you could play Milito more, or you could play Afellay more. It just seems it's those 11 plus Maxwell and Keita and maybe Boyan occasionally.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. But I mean, if you go back to the, I think the last two semi-finals that they've had against English clubs, in fact, the Champions League final against United, I think they had two of their defenders suspended. I think they had two of their defenders suspended for the second leg against Chelsea two seasons ago. Mm-hmm. And you do pick up suspensions, and
Piqué's out, isn't he? Only in the return game.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you take Piqué or Puyol or one of the others out of that back four, it suddenly looks weaker because their reserves aren't as strong, and they will, if they're going to go far in this Champions League, which obviously Arsenal hope they won't, they are going to pick up suspensions, and that is where they'll be tested. I mean, I remember in the 2009 final that did they slip Yaya Touré back there? I can't remember.
The crucial thing, Puyol played fullback and was the man of the match.
But they clearly have brilliant players, but their defence isn't the strongest part of the team, and their defensive cover clearly isn't the strongest part of the team because Guardiola isn't even using those players as rotating the squad when there's a case for doing so. That is a concern, and it is also incredibly difficult to win the Champions League. You look at the history of the European Cup, clubs used to retain it almost at will and win it three times in a row in some cases, and five times or six times or whatever it was in Real Madrid's case. Nobody has retained it in the modern Champions League era. If you look at Barcelona at the moment, you would say they are the best team in Europe, or certainly I would. But it's still very, very difficult to win this Champions League.
I want to throw one other thing out there. Obviously, the great Zlatan Ibrahimovic experiment last year was seen as a failure by Guardiola. He got rid of him. Although, to be fair, they did win the league. But what I found interesting was that the Ibrahimovic type was sold, and he wasn't replaced. It would have seemed logical to me over the summer to bring in one Cascarino type, even just for the bench, just somebody with size who could give you something different.
What, Llorente or somebody like that?
Well, I mean, Llorente, you're talking 40 million.
Well, but there is a
cheaper, hardworking option. The first option now off the bench when it comes to strikers is Boyan, who's like 5 foot one, just about, and who's very
young. He
calls
Messi lofty.
I don't think he's very good. And the other thing is that the next option is chucking Piqué and Busquets up front as a center forward, which they've also done. Is this the kind of thing where when they lose, then we're all going to, because we all love generalizing and piling on, and just going to pile and say, oh, look, there's no plan B.
Well, I would add, I mean, it's quite interesting that Real Madrid took Adebayor. Now, some people, like probably else here, would say, well, why would you want to take a lazy so-and-so like Adebayor? But have you watched him play for Madrid? The way he's run around, he's absolutely chasing his backside off Adebayor. Now, Man City fans and Arsenal fans remember the Adebayor that first broke into the team. Who did play like that.
Sensational.
And Barcelona could have took him because for absolutely guarantee he would have done what he's doing for Madrid, working very, very hard because he's got a point to prove.
All right, time now for some quick hits. Only one Premier League game this weekend, so let's start with that, since it's the biggest and best competition in the world. West Brom needed a late equaliser to grab a share of the spoils against Wolves. Hodgson ditched Di Matteo's 4-5-1 in favour of 4-4-2. Paddy, is this a wise change? And what are the things will Roy do differently?
I don't know about wise, but it surprised me. West Bromwich Albion, lots of very good midfield players. A striker who Odemwingie is probably best left alone. They did look made for 4-5-1, but Roy Hodgson's always played 4-4-2. So let's see.
Good news if you're Marc-Antoine Fortuné.
Correct,
Ollie. This particular game was also marred by fighting between supporters. A smoke bomb being thrown into the West Brom end, and Baggies fans responding by tearing up seats and throwing them back. Funny enough, I get the sense that you won't hear much else about this incident, but if this had happened in a UEFA competition, it would be taken far more seriously. It's the second time this year that there's trouble in the Midlands following the incidents at Birmingham Villa. But is this a purely isolated thing? Should we actually be talking more about it, or would we just be giving oxygen to the bad guys?
Well, first of all, I would say that the FA need to take strong action. And I mean, I remember an England game in Ukraine about 18 months ago when there were flares thrown on the pitch, and the FA made a formal complaint to UEFA about that, demanding action. I think action was taken. So I've got to say, if they do not take action themselves against about this, then certainly I am going to accuse them of great hypocrisy, and I really hope they do take action.
Good for you, Ollie. Somehow I kind of feel that a flare on the pitch is a little bit less serious than a flare into a crowd of people, but hey, for just me. Manchester United defeated Crawley, albeit just by single goal, and Sir Alex Ferguson allegedly was furious with his players. Cass, were United that bad? And also, how difficult is it for a top-flight player to play against a bunch of guys who are three, four, five tiers below you?
Yeah, they were that bad, especially in the second half. They were awful, and Fergie was right to be furious. So people like Obertan giving an opportunity at Bebe, Darren Gibson, 23 years old, giving an opportunity. And yes, it is tough playing against Crawley, but it's even tougher if you make it that hard. Man United players on the fringes need to play a very high level to get near the first team. They didn't this weekend.
Bad news for the United scrubs. Now, it was a tasty Old Firm as Celtic won 3-0 to go 8 points clear of Rangers. But of course, we do have two games in hand. Paddy, you're the most Scottish one here, although Cass might lay claim to that a little bit. when it comes to Celtic. But do Celtic deserve the title? And what will the future hold for young Neil Lennon?
Well, it's looking that way that Celtic certainly... I mean, Lennon is a young man. You know, he's the Rangers had at least one player, David Weir, who's older than Lennon.
Yeah, but David Weir's older than everybody.
That is true. There is a long future for young Neil Lennon. But he's coming along well. Those who were initially sceptical about whether he was ready for the job probably changing their minds. But really, the only way to judge a Celtic or Rangers manager is on what they do in Europe.
It took Manchester City a while to get going, but they eventually thumped Notts County 5-0. Ollie, two questions for you. Is it wise for City to put out strong lineups in every competition, or should they really just focus on getting into the top four? And also, is Super Mario Balotelli worth the trouble?
Well, if you look at City's approach to the Carling Cup earlier this season, they went out with a reserve team and went out very limply, and I think that was a big mistake because I think that was their best chance of winning a competition this season. They clearly are now putting great store in the FA Cup and the Europa League as well as the Premier League, and I think they've got the strength in depth to do that, and I think they'll win a trophy this season, but I don't think they would be doing themselves any favours if they minimise their chances in any of them by putting out weak teams.
Okay, notice how you skillfully avoided the Super Mario worth the trouble question.
Correct.
Birmingham City defeated Sheffield Wednesday 3-0 to advance to the next round, but Alec McLeish is worried that these cup runs could cost them dear, given that City's league position is nothing to write home about. Cass, do you have any sympathy for Big Ek? And is it really too much of a good thing for City?
Well, don't give players any excuses to take their foot off the pedal, first of all. Secondly, I think, you know, look at the cup games they've had. They've had Sheffield Wednesday at home. They had Coventry in the previous round at home. Good draws for them. I think the players will love to keep going further. You know, what better incentive for confidence and a good feeling around the club? So, no, I don't think it'll hinder their Premiership status. I think it'll all come down to whether they're good enough.
Are they staying up?
Yeah, I think they are. I think they're good enough. They're too hard to beat Birmingham to go down.
Gab, one for you now. UEFA have announced ticket prices for the Champions League final at Wembley. They range from £176 to £326, including administration charge. Everybody except me has complained about this. Surely you agree it's a travesty?
Yeah, it's funny, Paddy. I think you or I are actually in a minority. I did write this before I got to enjoy your excellent column in the game today. But I think it's absurd. The people who are paying these prices are the 11,000 people who by the end of March will enter some kind of lottery for the tickets. They're supposed to be the neutrals. You know who these people really are? These people come in three categories. Some of them are real purists who really could care less what game it is, or they just want to go see a football match. Some of them are fans of the teams remaining in the competition. What those guys will do when their team gets knocked out is simply go and sell their tickets on eBay at a tidy profit. And third are scalpers who care less because they're basically just touts and they want to go and make money. That's all this is about. I think what really matters is that I think we should credit UEFA for the fact that 50,000 tickets set apart at £80, which is far more reasonable, and compared to events like the Super Bowl, this is a very good deal. Thank you, Ollie. And now our Facebook question of the week. Those of you who went on to the game page on Facebook can submit your questions. And that's exactly what Steve Harrison did, who has a question directed at Paddy. Paddy, surely a winter break, even of 3 weeks, would be good for the whole industry, especially at the end of the transfer window. I expect Sir Alex Ferguson rather agrees with Steve Harrison. Do you?
I would like a winter break of at least 3 weeks every season, but I don't think it's necessary for English football. I don't think our weather lends itself to prediction of when exactly the winter is going to bite. So, no, I don't think so. I think players need rest in the middle of the season, but I think it should be given on a piecemeal basis. In other words, if Ferguson wants to send Scholes away to Bermuda in mid-season, or as he did with Schmeichel a few years ago, and Beckham and various other players, then they can come back refreshed without upsetting the rhythm of the team. That's the way to give winter breaks, to give them to individuals when they need them, rather than just having a blanket one at a time, which would almost invariably prove wrong.
So have lots of little breaks at the time of Sir Alex Ferguson's choosing. Would this just be only for United players? it for the rest of the
league. Each manager's choosing, of course. I mean, sometimes your winter break is dictated.
Would it be better if Sir Alex
sometimes
chose
your winter
for everybody?
Break, sometimes your winter break is of the tibia. You know, if you've just come back from a 5 month absence with injury, and somebody says, "Oh, you can't have your comeback because we're all going off to Dubai," you're not going to be very happy, are you?
Gentlemen, thank you so much. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Game. In the meantime, you can go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find your news, your gossip, your analysis, also your web chats. My web chat is every Monday. Paddy's is every
Tuesday.
There you go. And Ollie K is on Wednesday. Also, don't forget, you can follow myself, Paddy, Ollie, and a whole bunch of us Times writers and podcast regulars on Twitter. We'll be back next Monday, and we'll have the best of the weekend's action. Thank you so much for your time. Catch you next week. Till then, ta-ta.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.